Lowe's helps refresh your garden in time for Mother's Day. Right now, get 5 bags of 1.5 cubic foot Scotts Naturescapes mulch for just $10. Plus, select 1.5 gallon annuals hanging baskets make the perfect gift. Now 2 for only $15. The best garden starts with great deals. Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 5/7. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, discount taken at time of purchase.
This is a True Crime in Real Time update. The latest on the biggest cases we're following at True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
You know, when most people find themselves staring down the barrel of a federal indictment, racketeering, sex trafficking, coercion charges piled high, there's usually a moment where common sense kicks in. You sit down with your lawyer, you take a deep breath, and you figure out how to cut your losses, not Sean Diddy Combs. No, Diddy showed up in Manhattan federal court last week and basically said, "Nah, I'm good," to a federal plea deal that could have potentially shortened the rest of his life behind bars. It all unfolded in a tightly packed courtroom on April 25th. Diddy, sitting there in a sharp suit that probably cost more than most people's annual rent, faced a team of very serious prosecutors from the Department of Justice. These weren't lightweight charges either, the kind you can brush off with a fine or a few months of community service. We're talking about allegations of running a long-term coercive enterprise, trafficking women across state lines, and using his fame and fortune to allegedly force participation in sexual acts. Federal agents from Homeland Security Investigation spent years piecing this case together. And now here it was, a moment where Diddy could have made a deal, except he didn't. The government offered him a plea agreement. The details haven't been made public and probably won't be unless someone leaks them, but you can bet it involved some kind of prison time. Maybe something way lighter than what he'd face if a jury convicts him on all counts, but when push came to shove, Diddy's answer was a simple no. Not even a dramatic no, just a firm, lawyer-approved rejection. Judge Aaron Subramanian, presiding over the circus, wasn't about to let that moment pass quietly. He scheduled a follow-up hearing for May 1st just to make sure Diddy still feels that brave once the gravity of what he's doing fully sinks in. And look, rejecting a plea deal isn't unheard of. But it tells you something very specific. Diddy isn't just rolling the dice, he's betting the whole damn casino. He's gambling that either the government's case isn't as strong as they claim, or that he can convince a jury this whole thing has been blown wildly out of proportion. At that same hearing, we got the first real glimpse of how Diddy's team plans to fight this thing. His lead attorney, Mark Agnifilo, previewed what's going to be their central defense. This wasn't trafficking, this wasn't coercion, this was just the lifestyle. According to Agnifilo, Diddy wasn't running some underground criminal enterprise. He was living, as he framed it, a swinger lifestyle, one where group sex parties, multiple partners, and a certain loose attitude about boundaries were all just part of the social scenery. Think less organized crime boss and more hedonistic celebrity who didn't read the fine print on consent. Now, there's a reason lawyers trot out lifestyle defenses. It plays on the idea that just because behavior seems outrageous or morally questionable to some, doesn't necessarily make it illegal. In other words, Agnifilo is banking on the jury thinking, maybe Diddy's lifestyle was messy, maybe it was reckless, but messy isn't a federal crime. But the government? They weren't buying a word of it. Prosecutors hammered back hard. They didn't mince words. They laid out allegations that this wasn't freewheeling party culture. They claimed Diddy used manipulation, financial control, threats, even violence to get what he wanted. That it wasn't about mutual adult consent, it was about power. They allege women were recruited, pressured, and sometimes terrified into participating in acts they didn't want, all under the shadow of Diddy's influence. Lose Diddy's favor, and you didn't just lose a relationship. You lost career opportunities, housing, financial support. In that version of events, this isn't an eccentric celebrity story. It's trafficking, plain and simple. One of the more chilling points prosecutors raised is that this alleged coercion wasn't a one-off mistake. They suggest it was systematic, an operation allegedly designed to feed Diddy's ego and desires while shielding him from consequences. That's part of why the racketeering charge is sitting at the heart of this case. It's not just about isolated bad nights. It's about creating an ongoing enterprise of exploitation. And here's the thing. When Homeland Security Investigations is the lead agency on a celebrity case, not just the NYPD, not just the FBI, that tells you how seriously the government is taking this. HSI doesn't get involved in jaywalking. They go after human trafficking, organized crime, international smuggling. Their badge doesn't come out unless there's smoke. And where they say there's smoke, they're alleging there's a five-alarm fire. Despite all this, no new plea offers seem to be floating around. No second chances, no sweetheart deals. The government is treating this as a flagship case, one they intend to see through. Diddy's team, for their part, seems just as locked in. No signs of a panic switch being hit behind the scenes. They're riding this all the way into trial. It's a wild strategy. If he wins, he walks out a free man, potentially reclaiming whatever is left of his battered public image. If he loses, though, he's staring down decades in federal prison and probably an indelible legacy as the architect of his own downfall. It's the kind of all-or-nothing play you usually only see in movies, the moment where the protagonist or the villain, depending on how you view it, refuses to cut a deal because they still believe they can beat the system. The courtroom on April 25th gave us a glimpse into how high these stakes really are. Diddy is all in, betting his future, his fortune, and frankly, his freedom on a jury being willing to separate scandalous lifestyle choices from what the law defines as coercion and trafficking. Whether or not that gamble pays off is another story altogether. Because next comes an entirely different battlefield. Diddy's mental state at the time these alleged crimes occurred, and the defense is already laying the groundwork to argue that what Diddy thought he was doing and what he was actually doing might not be the same thing at all. But we'll get to that next. If rejecting a federal plea deal felt like a gutsy move, the next part of Diddy's defense plan takes things to a whole different level. Because now the spotlight isn't just on what he allegedly did. It's shifting to what was going on inside his head while he did it. Welcome to the mental capacity argument, where reality gets tangled up with perception. And perception can sometimes be a powerful shield against intent. The core of this new angle is simple, but potentially game-changing. Diddy's lawyers are preparing to argue that he wasn't thinking straight during the time he allegedly committed these crimes. Not because he didn't know right from wrong, not in some grand insanity plea kind of way, but because, according to them, years of heavy drug and alcohol use had fried his ability to form the specific criminal intent the government needs to prove. In legal terms, they're talking about mens rea, the guilty mind, the piece prosecutors must show beyond a reasonable doubt to convict him. To back up this argument, Diddy's team plans to bring in a hired gun, Dr. Eli Eun, a psychiatrist who specializes in substance use disorders. Dr. Eun is expected to testify that Diddy's alleged pattern of drug and alcohol abuse left him so impaired that he simply couldn't form the calculated, coercive intent the government claims he had. The idea being Diddy might have been reckless, he might have been out of control, but he wasn't consciously orchestrating a criminal operation in the way the prosecution paints it. It's a classic diminished capacity defense, not claiming innocence, but trying to muddy the waters enough to make criminal intent look like a stretch. The way defense teams love to frame it is, think of it like trying to punish someone for driving the wrong way down a highway, when they're not even sure what state they're in. If the brain's scrambled enough, can you really prove they meant to break the law? Of course, the government isn't letting this slide in without a fight. Prosecutors quickly moved to block Dr. Aeon's testimony before it ever sees the light of a courtroom. Their argument is straightforward and pretty scathing. First, they point out that Diddy's legal team disclosed their intent to use a psychiatric expert way too late in the process. Under federal rules, if you're planning to bring in expert testimony about mental capacity, you're supposed to notify the court and opposing counsel early enough that they can properly prepare for it. Springing it on them at the last minute is not just frowned upon. It's grounds to have the testimony tossed entirely. Second, and maybe even more damaging, prosecutors say that Dr. Aun has never actually examined Diddy. He's basing his opinions on secondhand reports, public information, and whatever curated records the defense has handed him. In other words, it's like trying to diagnose someone's mental state by reading the tabloids and scrolling through Instagram. Without a personal clinical evaluation, prosecutors argue, Dr. Aun's testimony isn't much more than an educated guess, and educated guesses don't meet the standard for scientific evidence in a criminal trial. And third, prosecutors warn that letting Dr. Aun take the stand could seriously confuse the jury. Mental capacity defenses walk a razor-thin line between explaining behavior and excusing it. The fear here is that jurors could hear about Diddy's alleged substance abuse and start thinking in emotional terms, feeling sympathy or seeing him as a victim of addiction, instead of focusing purely on whether he committed the crimes he's charged with. So now Judge Arun Subramanian has a tough call to make. As of this moment, no ruling has been issued on whether Dr. Aun's testimony will be allowed. If the judge lets it in, Diddy's team gets a powerful new narrative to work with. A man who wasn't in full control, lost inside a haze of drugs, alcohol, and bad decisions. If the judge bars it, the defense loses one of their more creative lifelines, forcing them to rely purely on lifestyle arguments and cross-examining government witnesses. Beyond the courtroom filings, there's another layer to all this that's hard to ignore. After Diddy's arrest back in September 2024, he was reportedly placed on suicide watch at the Metropolitan Detention Center in Brooklyn. That's not the kind of thing prosecutors or defense attorneys usually advertise, but it leaked out through media reports and quietly confirmed what many suspected, that Diddy's mental state, at least at that moment, was fragile. Suicide watch isn't something corrections officials throw around lightly. It typically means there were real concerns that an inmate might harm themselves, whether based on something they said, behavior they exhibited, or the circumstances they were facing. For Diddy, being locked up without bail on federal trafficking charges with his public image imploding day by day, the pressure must have been suffocating. And while the placement on suicide watch doesn't directly prove anything about his mental state during the years he allegedly committed these crimes, it's going to hang in the background of this case. Defense attorneys know that jurors are human. If they can paint a picture of a man unraveling under the weight of fame, addiction, and bad choices, it might not get him a full acquittal. But it could be enough to plant reasonable doubt about whether he truly had the mindset to mastermind a criminal enterprise. Still, it's important to remember diminished capacity isn't a get-out-of-jail-free card. Even if jurors believe Diddy was impaired, it doesn't mean they have to let him off the hook. The law says you can be impaired and still be guilty if you crossed certain lines. It's about whether he understood what he was doing and whether he intended the results of his actions. Blaming the drugs, in other words, only gets you so far. And let's be real. The defense is going to have a tough time squaring the image of diminished capacity with the broader allegations. This isn't a case built on a single night or a one-time lapse. The government alleges a long-running pattern, coordinated parties, transportation of victims across state lines, payoff attempts to cover things up, a whole infrastructure of alleged exploitation. If the jury sees careful planning in the evidence, impaired or not, it might be game over. The fight over Dr. Aun's testimony will be one of the most critical pre-trial battles in this case. And it's all happening against the backdrop of a prosecution that isn't just aiming to tell jurors what happened, but to show them, through video, through eyewitnesses, through documentation, the scope of the operation they say Diddy was running. Because just over the horizon, another bombshell piece of evidence is waiting to drop into the courtroom. It's already been ruled admissible, it's graphic, it's visceral. And it's going to be a centerpiece of the government's story about who Diddy was behind closed doors. And that's where we're headed next. There's a moment in almost every major trial where you can feel the balance of power shift. Sometimes it's a witness, sometimes it's a piece of evidence, and sometimes it's a video that punches you right in the gut before a single word is even said. In the case against Sean Diddy Combs, that moment arrived when Judge Aaron Subramanian ruled that a 2016 surveillance video, the one that shows Diddy physically assaulting his then-girlfriend Cassie Ventura, will be played for the jury. No edits, no blurring, no hiding behind euphemisms. The jury will see it all. The footage comes from a hotel hallway in Los Angeles. It's security camera footage, cold and clinical, the kind that doesn't care about celebrity status or million-dollar lawyers. It shows Diddy allegedly attacking Cassie, shoving her, kicking her while she's down in an encounter so violent that even people who had followed Diddy's reputation for years felt a chill when they watched it. Now, Diddy's defense team fought like hell to keep that video out. They argued that the footage was misleading, claiming it had been sped up somehow to make the actions seem more violent than they were. They also tried to cast doubt on how the footage even surfaced, raising questions about whether the chain of custody had been broken, whether it had been leaked improperly by law enforcement, whether it had been sensationalized for maximum media impact. The defense wanted the judge to believe that this was about emotion, not facts, and that playing the tape would unfairly prejudice the jury against their client before they even heard any testimony. But Judge Subramanian wasn't buying it. In his ruling, he made it clear the probative value of the video, just meaning its ability to prove key facts, outweighed any risk of unfair prejudice. In plain English, that means the video isn't just inflammatory. It's relevant. And when you're facing charges rooted in allegations of violence, control, and coercion, a video of you physically assaulting a partner isn't something the jury has to imagine. It's something they'll watch unfold right in front of them. From a legal strategy standpoint, this is devastating for Diddy. Trials aren't won by dazzling speeches or clever cross-examinations. They're won by moments that stick in a jury's brain and won't let go. A surveillance video showing real physical violence or not alleged, not inferred, but seen, can anchor an entire case. It's visceral. It bypasses the part of the brain that processes doubt and goes straight to instinct. This man hurt someone. This man had control. This man had power. And suddenly every accusation that follows, every story about manipulation, about coercion, about threats, starts to sound a lot less like fiction. Prosecutors have been clear that they see this tape as a cornerstone of their broader narrative. They aren't trying to argue that the hotel hallway incident was the crime he's being charged with. They're arguing that it shows a pattern of abuse, a pattern of entitlement, a pattern where violence wasn't a last resort but part of the playbook. In that context, the alleged sex trafficking and coercion don't come out of nowhere. They fit a pattern the jury will have seen with their own eyes. And then there's Cassie herself. Listed officially in court documents as Victim 1, Cassie Ventura is expected to testify publicly during the trial. Not behind a screen, not using a pseudonym. She'll stand in front of the jury and recount what she says happened to her during her years with Diddy. Her civil lawsuit, which was settled privately late in 2023, opened a window into those allegations. Claims of years of physical abuse, psychological manipulation, and control. But now, for the first time, those claims will be subjected to cross-examination under the rules of a criminal trial, not a civil settlement. It's a massive risk for both sides. For the prosecution, Cassie's credibility is crucial. If the jury finds her believable, it strengthens every part of their case. If they find her inconsistent or unreliable, it could cast shadows over the broader narrative. But with the hotel footage now officially part of the record, Cassie walks into that courtroom with a level of credibility few witnesses ever get. Because the jury will have already seen with their own eyes at least one moment where her claims of abuse line up perfectly with hard evidence. Other alleged victims are also expected to testify, though many will likely do so anonymously, to protect their identities. The judge is weighing requests for special measures, things like pseudonyms, restricted courtroom access, maybe even voice distortion, to ensure that victims aren't re-victimized by the trial process itself. In a case with this much media attention, those protections aren't just procedural. They're survival tactics. Without them, many of the women involved would likely be too afraid to testify at all. And make no mistake, the prosecution is planning to make this a full-scale presentation. Jury selection is set to kick off on May 5th, and once the trial gets underway, it's expected to stretch across 8 to 10 weeks. That's a long time in a federal courtroom. Long enough for the government to lay out not just isolated incidents, but an entire ecosystem of alleged exploitation. They're planning to walk the jury through incident after incident, witness after witness, showing a pattern they say stretches across states, across years, across dozens of victims. This isn't going to be a quick hit-and-run case. It's going to be a grind. The Department of Justice, backed by Homeland Security Investigations, has spent years building this file. Wire transfers, hotel records, testimony from people who say they helped recruit women into Diddy's inner circle. Allegations of payments made to cover up bad nights gone worse. The government isn't just bringing charges, they're bringing receipts. For Diddy, the stakes couldn't be higher. This isn't just about reputation anymore. It's about freedom. If convicted on the most serious charges, racketeering, sex trafficking, obstruction of justice, Diddy could be looking at a federal sentence measured in decades. Not years, decades. The kind of sentence where you don't just lose your career, you lose everything. And right now, with that hotel hallway video ready to play in open court, with Cassie prepared to take the stand and look the jury in the eye, the path ahead looks brutal. No more curated public image, no more carefully worded press releases, no more high-priced settlements quietly tied up behind closed doors. What happens next will happen. Under the harsh, unblinking lights of a federal courtroom, with 12 ordinary citizens holding Diddy's fate in their hands.
She was the perfect wife, always smiling, always supportive. A pillar of the community, beloved by friends, adored by family, and secretly researching undetectable poisons in her spare time. Maybe it was the way he chewed. Maybe she just got bored. Or maybe, just maybe, she had been planning this since the honeymoon. But if he had just paid attention, if he had just known what to look for, if he had only subscribed to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and learned the red flags, he could have heard every episode of Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Ad-free, and before everyone else, he could have seen it coming. Instead, he's 6 feet under, and she's shopping for husband number two. Don't be like him. Subscribe now to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.